Hi there, and welcome to the Engage Customer Podcast, where you'll discover the latest insights, opinions, and trends within the industry. This podcast is proudly sponsored by Salesforce, the world's number one service platform. With Salesforce, you have a 360-degree view of your customers, empowering agents and making interactions easy for your customers. The result? Deeper customer relationships built on intelligence, empathy, and trust. Visit sfdc.co/customer-service to find out more.
Today, our editor, David Craik, is delighted to be joined by Ian Weber-Rostron, Head of Outsourcing and International at N Brown, a 2018 Engage Award winner and case study presenter at our 2019 Future of the Contact Center conference. Ian is a tenacious leader with a strong track record in managing the end-to-end lifecycle of contact center operations, in-house and outsourced, onshore and offshore. Ian has been Head of Outsourcing and International for N Brown Group for over 3 years.
Thank you for joining us. And also thank you very much for your talk last week at the conference. Just interested really in talking to you about perhaps some of the issues, points that you raised during that talk. So first of all, just interested in perhaps you mentioned that N Brown has changed as a business over the last few years, catalogued to being very much an online retailer. Can you maybe just start off by talking about that change and also how important it's been for contact centre and customer service to both understand that and to keep pace with it?
Yeah, sure. So I joined N Brown back in 2015, and at that point, N Brown was partway through a transformation in terms of the way that customers effectively shop with us. So, I mean, what that actually means is back in 2015, we were looking at something like around about 60% of our revenue came through the kind of online channels versus traditional channels. So we still had a very large portion of our business that was coming through things like paper, catalogues, even people filling out those kind of paper order forms that you get in magazines and stuff like that. So, you know, I mean, genuinely, those things were quite large parts of our business even back then. So, you know, we're moving very quickly towards a world where, you know, customers were choosing to interact with us online. And, you know, we had websites then. You could buy stuff on our websites. So it's very much down to the customer. We never have, and we still don't push the customer through any particular channel. But what we were finding was that customers were just naturally choosing to use those digital channels on desktop initially, but certainly in the recent 12 to 24 months, mobile has been huge for us. And where we're at now as a business, 2018 and into 19, is that 60% has moved very quickly up to sort of 85%, touching 90% some weeks. And what that means for us is, you know, on the one hand, you could say, well, customers are still buying stuff. It's still kind of home shopping, isn't it? You know, we still send stuff out using the same couriers and all that kind of dynamic. But ultimately, it is a difference in terms of how we talk to our customers and what customers' expectations are of us. So examples might be back in the days where customers would receive the catalogue through the door, it was sat at the coffee table, ordering from that catalogue might have felt a little bit like making a list of all the things that you want, all the sizes, all the colours, all those fantastic things that we used to do. Yep. And the telephone number for which you call to place that order. And you place your order, you wait for your delivery, you might have waited 3 days for delivery, something like that. And then, you know, if something wasn't quite right, you'd maybe even consider writing a letter, or you'd certainly pick up the phone to deal with that. So that is, in effect, what the journey used to be. And these days, we're increasingly seeing, okay, so the customer orders online on a mobile device while they're sat on the train or doing whatever else. They don't necessarily want to talk to us as part of that journey, as you can imagine. They just want it to be easy. So that customer places the order. Do they want to wait 3 days for delivery? Probably not. Next day delivery is kind of more increasingly the expectation these days. You know, when that delivery arrives, you're probably not going to be in, so you can you can choose to have it left with a neighbour or by the side of the house or wherever you do it, or even at one of our collection points. And then that kind of post order contact looks very different as well. So if I've got an issue with that and I'm that type of customer, I'm not going to be picking up the catalogue and ringing the number on it. I'm going to be going back to the device where I placed the order. Okay, so what kind of, how am I going to contact you as part of that journey? Well, it's going to be digitally. The customer might pick up the phone if they really want that resolving. So that whole journey is very different, and it requires a very different contact centre as opposed to the one that we used to have.
So do you find that they're contacting you more digitally rather than calling up the phone and speaking to someone in the contact centre? What are you seeing there?
So we're seeing a couple of different things in terms of what volume we get within our customer services operations at N Brown. So historically, we were very much about taking the order on the telephone, and a large part of our headcount was dedicated to that purpose and, you know, basically getting the most value out of that experience as well. Yes, you know, we wanted to make that a positive experience for the customer, but there was also a large element of upselling, cross-selling, marketing within that sales call. These days, the customer's placing the orders online, so we're seeing a lot fewer of those coming through. So that's the first point. So that's where our big reduction has come in terms of contact centre volume. Yes, we are seeing an uplift in digital customer contact volume. So, you know, we saw the email trend coming through sort of 2 to 3 years ago, roughly speaking, and that's still prevalent now. However, what we're seeing is a big shift towards chat. And, you know, amongst email and chat, there's a big sort of customer sentiment of, I don't want to pay to contact you, and we need to be really really straightforward about what the customer's saying in that space. There are a definite cohort of customers who feedback through to us as part of our Voice of the Customer program that they don't want to ring the 0844 telephone numbers or whatever they are. So we need to be very clear on that. But we are still predominantly telephone though. But what is left within that telephone space is very service focused. So it's not, I want to place the order by telephone. It's, you know, if something's gone wrong, or if I need I need some help with something, then, you know, customers still do like to talk to us on the telephone. And that split is roughly 85-15, maybe 80-20 telephone to digital. Whereas, you know, a few years ago, that would have been 5 or 10%. So it is moving, but it is still predominantly telephone, and it is less about selling stuff on that telephone call, and it's more about helping the customer, making it a positive experience.
I think you mentioned in the talk about the shop counter idea. Can you maybe elaborate on that in terms of the contact centre being perhaps being behind that counter? Can you talk a little bit more about that? And also, you mentioned also there about the Voice of the Customer program. Can you maybe just expand on that as well?
Yeah, sure. So I suppose, you know, we use this analogy internally when it comes to, okay, so what is our purpose within customer services? Now, as anybody sort of who talks about contact centres, you might sort of say, well, your purpose is to answer the telephone, is it not? and that's the first thing that comes to mind. Yes, of course it is. But what is it about talking to our customers that's really important? Is it processing whatever they've called up for? You know, if it's something transactional, place an order, I want to make a payment, I want to process a return or whatever, those are very transactional things. You know, your ability to add value as part of those transactions is very limited, really. You know, then you've got your customer who wants help, they need assistance, they've got a question. Our ability to make that experience a positive one, you know, we can do a lot in that space. But then you sort of think, well,
what are we really here for in terms of what we do in the context of our wider business? So, you know, we have a product and a service offering to our customers as a business. And if you forget the contact center for a minute, then what's really important is that that product and that service is top notch. That's why customers shop with us. Customers don't shop with us because of our contact center capability. So what's really important is getting that customer feedback, because we run a division and the only division who actually talk to our customers. So what's really important to us is that we get that feedback from those customers, from those 80,000 telephone calls a week or whatever the number is, and actually feed it into our wider business to say, you know, this is what customers are saying about our products, our services, and things like delivery, returns, the stock levels, the size, the fit, all those things are our bread and butter. That's what we're here to do for our customers. So, you know, if we don't feed any of that back to our business, we're missing a huge trick. And actually, I'll go as far as to say that's our number one purpose, as opposed to just handling the transactional stuff that a contact center does.
Can you just elaborate that a little bit more? I mean, how do you, you know, translate that customer voice and customer feedback and all the conversations that you have and take it to, you know, to the boardroom? I mean, any examples of how you've improved the business in that way, improved products or service?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the list is as long as your arm, and I was just chatting to our customer improvement manager before this, actually, and she took a vast intake of breath and just said, well, which one do you want? which is quite funny, but I'll certainly give a couple of examples. So in terms of how we collect that data, though, that's really important to us, and we put a lot of effort into that. So first and foremost, you know, you can't sort of really get a true voice of the customer without just asking them, you know, how do you feel about your shopping experience, about your experience when you contacted us, and all those types of questions. So we ask those questions on a large scale to our customer base when they've come through our contact center, but also when they've not. So we do the web surveys as well, and those customers, chances are they didn't come through the contact center. So it's important that we have different sources of information to be able to pull together from different parts of the customer journey. So we use those tools. We use speech analytics as part of our call recording software, and we also use good old sort of quality monitoring. You know, nothing ultimately replaces a human being sitting there listening, not on a random basis anymore, because those days are gone, but certainly in a targeted way, listening to those customer interactions to really get a feel for, okay, so what's caused the customer to contact, what do they like about our business, what do they not like about our business. So we pull all of that together into basically a report, which is called Voice of the Customer, believe it or not. And but what's important is what we do with that information. So, you know, this started a good four or five years ago for us as a division, where we went right to the top of our organisation and basically said all the things I'm saying to you on this call. And ultimately, we went to our chief exec at the time and just kind of said, look, we need your support with this. How do we get all of this feedback that's coming from our customers, and how do we get it into our business such that it lands properly and such that action is taken off the back of it? And that's the biggest challenge with any organization when it comes to this type of stuff. And, you know, the answer is very simple. If we get buy-in from the top, then it will happen. So, you know, practically speaking, what that meant was, you know, it got an agenda item, top of the agenda item on the board meeting. So all board meetings, there was a rule. First agenda item is always about the customer. It's simple stuff like that that just really hammers home, because we all know in any meeting that we go to, the first agenda point is always the one that takes up probably about 70% of the time in the meeting. So that's our way of getting our foot firmly within that door. But then there were a lot of other forums that we set up across the business to engage our colleagues in terms of really landing those messages. So if we needed to go and speak to our buying and merchandising department about stock levels, you know, availability, that type of stuff, it's important for us that that lands in the right way. We don't want to come across as, how we like to call it, a snagger. So for those in the decorating trade, you know, somebody walks around a room and picks up all the errors in somebody else's work. We don't want to come across like that, because we're not gonna really get the buy-in. So we put a lot of work into building the right kind of relationships with the key stakeholders from each of these functions, be it buying and merchandising, IT, logistics, whoever it is.
Yeah. And have you found that they're very open to this, or has that had to develop over time?
Oh, it's not easy. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, this isn't all sunshine and rainbows. It's been a tough journey, but we've had to keep plugging away at it. You know, some of those conversations are really quite difficult, because ultimately you're asking somebody who's been doing that job for a long time and who is an expert in their profession to do something differently, because you're telling them that what they're doing isn't landing properly with customers. So, you know, it'd be very easy for us to say, well, you know, this is what the customer's saying, you know, you either listen to them or you don't, and to have that very sort of standoffish type of attitude. But again, going back to the relationships, we just work really hard to make sure we're having the right kind of conversations. And, you know, ultimately we turn those difficult conversations around and we turn it into real action.
Have you had to talk to your contact centre staff about this as well? And do they have to, imagine, talk to customers in a different way, perhaps to try and get some more of this feedback, some more of this information?
So what we do with the contact centre in terms of driving that positive experience is, well, first and foremost, in terms of our purpose, you know, we're not here to drive the cross sells and the add-ons anymore. You know, we still do that, but that's not our primary purpose. We're all about the customer's experience. And to change that, it's all about metrics. You know, we, like any other contact center, we have a set of KPIs that our outsourcers support us with our outsourced contact center. How do those contracts work with those outsourcers? How do the KPIs therefore land on the floor? And that's as simple as, you know, making CSAT a KPI. So we put a lot of work into, well, you know, it can be as simple as that at a high level, but then down to the nuance, you know, what do we do when advisors quite rightly say, well, how could I have possibly kept that customer happy when their delivery didn't arrive on time? And that's where we use scale and statistical sort of validity to really land those KPIs. So, and we use multiple sites, multiple outsourcers to create benchmark effects within that. So it might be, you know, the baseline CSAT for any given week drops from 9 to 8 because we've had our couriers about a very, really bad week. That's not the fault of the contact center. But we get that feedback. We take it to the rest of our business, and then we use those numbers sensibly when it comes to our contact center. So we sort of say, well, target can't be 9 for that week. It's got to be 8. And we know it's 8 because we've got two different outsource providers who both went from 9 to 8. So that's the kind of stuff that we do in the contact center world. But in terms of that purpose, we find that communication is key. So every week we'll go out with effectively a summary of some of the best pieces of customer feedback. Both, a lot of positive feedback, but also some of the more, some of the stuff that we can do better as well. And we put it all over the screens in our contact centres, both internally and with our outsourcers. And, you know, the positive ones, we put the names to them. So, you know, we celebrate those advisors who've attracted positive feedback from customers. And you know, some of them are absolutely fantastic. We often forget about all those really positive interactions and how much of an impact they can have on those customers.
Is there an example there? Perhaps just, you know, perhaps a contact centre assistant helping calm down an irate customer, or perhaps helping them fix the delivery, or anything like
that? Yeah, well, you know, what we often find within that direct customer feedback, when we're looking at that verbatim stuff as part of our surveys, is the customer almost forgets what the issue was. And I think this is back to that point of, you know, customers who have had an issue and then that issue gets resolved, they're often more valuable to us commercially as a business than a customer who had a seemingly happy journey but just never had to contact us. And I think the reason is that there's a bit of psychology going on there, but in terms of your most recent experience is the one that sticks in your mind. So it's like anything in life, I suppose, which is, you know, if we can take a customer who's had a bad experience, a big part of what we do is within customer service is to do with delivery. I won't say it's just delivery, you know. Our logistics director is probably waiting outside my door now, but it's inevitable for a home shopping retailer that delivery is a big thing. You know, you order today, you want it tomorrow. And if it doesn't come tomorrow, then you're going to be upset about that, because everybody gets excited when they buy stuff, and we're no different. Or if the delivery came and it got left out in the rain and the product is ruined or something like that. You know, those things happen. The question is then, how do we deal with it? So, you know, this is where the old policies, procedures, we've got to challenge the rest of our business. So, you know, in years gone by, we asked our customers to fill out a form, for example, when a parcel went missing. Whereas, you know, if we could just see in our system, actually, you know, the customer never even receives that. Why are we asking them to fill out a form to do that? We're just hacking the customer off. So, you know, it's small changes like that where, you know, you shop with a lot of other retailers, you never get asked to fill out a form. You know, they just kind of send you a replacement. And so it's stuff like that where we, in the past, have had to challenge our business and get stuff changed. But ultimately, it's got to be about that experience, because that customer then goes away and it's either going to be, you know what, they weren't that good at dealing with that issue. And then that's just the seed planted in the customer's mind. And the next time they think about buying something, you know, these days you can't afford to be that retailer who's had a bad experience like that with a customer, because they're not going to buy from you. You know, the customer's got more choice than ever these days. So they'll just buy with one of your competitors instead. So it's got to be that last experience has got to be a positive one, because we find they do come back when we do that.
So do you think this retail volatility that we've seen on the high street, if that heightens the need to ensure that contact centre and customer service experience is just as good as it could be?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we think it matters more than ever. And it's not just us. You know, we work with various organisations, the Institute of Customer Services and others, to kind of understand what's really going on in the world of customer services. And you know, everybody's saying the same thing, but ultimately, it's that kind of piece where customers have more choice than ever in this digital world. You know, the customer isn't reliant on a catalogue falling through the door to be able to get their stuff for Christmas or whatever event it is. They're pulling their phones out of their pockets and they've got access to the world straight away. So, you know, even our older customers have that kind of ability now, and even our older customers do shop online. So what that means is, if you're not cutting it, then straight away, you know, they don't have to ring somebody else and order another catalogue, which would have been, you know, maybe a detractor for moving retailers previously. But actually, just nip on the website and you've placed an order already. So, you know, our competition are making it easier than ever for our customers just to jump over. So we've got to work harder than ever to keep them, is the summary, I think.
Yeah. And do you think it's helped with the growth of the business? Does it help, you know, financially or with employee engagement, retention? Does it work at those levels?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, with employee engagement to start with, you know, it's long been known that there's an absolute correlation between employee engagement and customer engagement. We're well aware of that. We work hard both internally and with our outsource providers to understand exactly what's going on in that space to make the most we can out of that, and that translates directly into customer experience. We also work hard with our partner relationships. That's not just in the outsourcing space, but with technology providers, service providers, anybody who who has a touch point with our customer experience, and that's pretty much anybody really when you work in a retailer. So you know, the more positive our relationships are with our customers, the people who talk to our customers, the people who provide our systems and services, then the better that customer experience is going to be ultimately, no matter how kind of convoluted the route is through and how indirect that impact is. It is there, so we work hard with our relationships to make sure we get those right, those outcomes for our customers.
Okay. You mentioned outsourced providers a couple of times. Can you just summarise perhaps what the model is? I mean, is it the contact centre which is outsourced, or how does that work at Embra?
Yeah, so within customer services, so you know, we outsource a number of operations across the whole business, but I'll talk more specifically about customer services. We've run a mixture in the past of in-house and outsourced providers. At the moment, we see a lot of value in running champion challenger frameworks with our outsourced providers. So, you know, I'll never say that I'll never say never in terms of single supplier, but at the minute we find the champion challenger framework works quite well. So we have one strategic partner who has the majority of our headcount, if you will, and we then have a challenger provider who serves as a you know, for want of a better description, to keep our strategic partner honest and on their toes. And you know, we find that works really well. So if we look at CSAT as a KPI, for example, it can be quite subjective. It can be quite woolly. What's the right number? There are so many different factors that can affect it. All of a sudden, if you have two providers with both handling the same type of work on a random basis, and you get the same KPI back, then you start to understand it a lot better. You start to understand those kind of external factors versus the internal factors versus the stuff that is directly within the outsourcer's control. And that allows them to have real conversations on the floor as well, in terms of, back to the 8 out of 10 versus the 9 out of 10, which is the right number, don't know. But if you've got another provider there, then all of a sudden you kind of know what the right number is, because if somebody else is doing better than you, then you know you've got to up your game. So, you know, we see genuine value in that kind of operational setup. And it's the same when it comes to on and offshore kind of locations in terms of contact centres. So we run a mixture. But again, you know, we wouldn't necessarily put everything offshore, not knowing what the performance would be like if we had it onshore. So, you know, having the ability to benchmark what good looks like is incredibly important to us. And we work hard to maintain an operating model, a customer services estate, which allows us to do that benchmarking.
Okay, great stuff, Orion. Well, just final question, just in terms perhaps of the future. I think in the talk you said that you had no clue as to what the future would hold, which is, you know, very understandable. I mean, what do you think could be around the corner, and what are the main things that Embra will be keeping focus on?
So the number one thing for us is making sure our people are experts in delivering change and driving change as well. So, you know, whether you're a decision maker who needs to drive more change, or whether you are not a key decision maker, but you need to be able to adapt to change, that can be either a really bad experience, or it can be a really positive experience. So we believe that one of the key points in terms of keeping us competitive for the future is that ability to both drive and be positive along with change. So so we work hard at all levels to maintain that, and we see that as a key part of our future. I think the rest of it is, you know, a lot of people talk about technology when you look at the future, new channels. I don't necessarily see that as something that, not that we don't need to be aware of it, but I don't see it as a target to be working towards. So as long as we make All channels, all technology available to our customers. Our customers will choose, which is the right route. Back to the customer has the power here. They'll just go down whichever route they want to go down. And if that flips tomorrow and it goes back to 100% telephony, then we'll do that. If it goes to 100% digital, then we'll do that as well. But what really matters is that our people are in the right space and able to deal with whatever the future holds for them. So that's what's really important to us. And I know that's probably shying away from, kind of trying to take a punt on what technology is going to come and hit us over the head in the next 6 or 12 months. But ultimately, it's about what we put our time and effort into within Nbrand. We could put a lot of time and effort into trying to predict whether our customers are going to be ordering by Google Home or Alexa in the next 6 or 12 months. But you know what? If they want that kind of stuff, they'll just tell us. So, we'll just make sure our people are in good shape to deal with whatever's coming down the line.
Okay, wonderful. All right, Ian, thank you very much for your time. That's been fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks, David.